Well, I think the importance of the sugar bowl is that it tells us, or it should lead us to think or to recognize that the abolitionist movement was a mass movement. We're often encouraged to think about abolitionism in Britain, in England or in Britain, as something that just happened in Parliament, that just involved Wilberforce or Wilberforce and Clarkson, or Wilberforce and Clarkson and Sharp, rather than the fact that the movement, especially in the 1780s and 1790s, and also in the early 19th century, was a mass movement. In fact, we could argue that the abolitionist movement, that's the movement against human trafficking in particular, was the first modern mass political movement. And it may even have been the biggest political movement in Britain's history. But it's one which is seldom discussed. It's not only the first modern mass political movement, it was a movement that involved working people, perhaps for the first time in politics, women for the first time in politics, children even were involved. So that's very, very important. It tells us something about Britain and its history and its people, that so many people were engaged in this movement. And it kind of counters a view of history that one still finds. I know sometimes when I talk to teachers, or have talked to teachers in the past, people say, oh, we can't teach about, or we find it very difficult to teach about slavery, slave trade, human trafficking, we feel guilty. What do you feel guilty about? You know, it's very likely that your ancestors were involved in the abolitionist movement. It's much more likely your ancestors were involved in the abolitionist movement than they were slave owners or something. So it's very, very important for understanding Britain's history to understand this question of abolitionism. And of course, the sugar boycott, or the boycott of sugar products, sugar, rum, other things, was one important and popular aspect of that movement. It also shows us that the movement was broad. It involved, you know, some of the manufacturers like Wedgwood and others who, depending on how you looked at it, how you look at it, you could say either they contributed their expertise to get behind the movement, or you could say they used the movement to make money, depending on how one wants to look at it. But they used the modern kind of marketing techniques which were at the disposal at that time. They produced cups, they produced brooches, they produced, you know, plaques that people could put in their houses, they produced prints of slave ships, you know, all of the modern marketing propaganda techniques of the period. So that's what that, you know, these kind of images of sugar bowl and so on speak to. Of course, there's also the whole politics of the boycott campaign, that it arose after Parliament had turned down the first Abolition Act in 1791. So it shows, anyway, kind of one aspect of this political struggle at that time, that of course most people didn't have the vote, had no other political recourse. So boycotting sugar, signing petitions, were the kind of political activities that they could participate in that period. Of course, the kind of politics of the movement, the idea one should eat East Indian sugar, that's the sugar from India, which it was said wasn't slave produced. Anyway, that's kind of another issue, whether who produced it and in what conditions and so on. But anyway, there's a whole argument about not eating other kind of, either abstaining altogether. And abstaining was another kind of political issue, because abstinence was, some people thought, a very Christian, righteous thing to do, and sugar being a poison and evil, addictive drug, to abstain from it was also a very moral thing to do. So it tells us a lot about the kind of politics, the mixture of political commitment, religious commitment, that existed at the end of the 18th century and beginning of the 19th century.